as I said, this is going to be our final class on the book of Job. And I've entitled this Final Thoughts, and I really mean that in reference to your thoughts. I really would like us to use our time to kind of reflect on what we've learned here in the book of Job. Maybe talk about some things that we really haven't still answered, maybe some questions and things that are maybe still bothering people. Maybe plaguing people would be a better way to put it, because the book of Job, as we said in the very beginning of our study, it's extremely challenging. Just extremely challenging. There's no biblical book like this. I mean, this is a unique book of Scripture. And, you know, we see things in Job, we are forced to think about things in Job that you're not really forced to think about anywhere else in any other book of Scripture. But I think it's good that we have this kind of study. And okay. What I want to do is just ask you some questions and see if this can evoke some discussion. I want this very much to be a discussion class. Marty, you actually conduct discussion classes? Really? Do you? Well, today, yes, that is the case. And the first question that I just want to ask, do you have any questions about anything in the text itself? I'm not talking here about something that the text makes you think of. We're going to get to those kind of questions. But is there anything in the actual interpretation of the text itself that we maybe haven't dealt with sufficiently? Anything that you don't understand that the text is actually stating? Felt like we probably had covered those kinds of questions pretty well, but I wanted to just begin with that. Anything at all along that line? Okay. What's the purpose of the book? Now that we've got to the end of all this, let's talk for a few minutes about what the purpose of this book is. What and maybe you're, I would hope maybe that you're ideas might have changed, might have evolved a little bit from when we first began this study. You may recall as we were introducing ourselves to the book of Job in the very first of our quarter, I addressed with you what the purpose of the book is. And a lot of different statements were made about that. I'd kind of like us to now reflect on this as we get down to the end of the book. What do you think is the purpose of the book? Why did God give this book to ancient Israel as part of their Old Testament canon? Nancy?
Well, you said,
because
I wrote it down.
Well, okay, Doc.
It was through Job's repentance. Because he was a righteous man and blameless, still there was something that he had humbled himself for.
I said that? What a ridiculous thing for me to have said. So put this in your own words then. What are you seeing as the purpose of the book?
What I thought of it and what I want to carry is that we're not supposed to be completely healthy and completely happy on earth, because that's what heaven is for.
Okay. So the book of Job is teaching us that this life is not where God is going to resolve all of our issues and resolve all the inequities and solve all of the problems. And so even righteous people are going to have to endure that in this life. Okay? I think that certainly, I mean, that's if you don't get that as one of the main purposes of the book of Job, I think you've certainly missed something. So I think that that's good. And you've worded that well. Yeah.
Everything's going to be great, you know.
That's
not the way it works. It never has.
Yeah, everyone here, Darren, there, that one of the purposes of the book of Job is just to teach this whole business of serving God. It isn't so that, okay, you get this. So you do this, and so God gives you that. And so this is how it works, nice and neat. And it's not what you get out of this. And let me just follow up on what he said there at the end. Do you agree with what he said? That a lot of people really think that. In fact, that's what people think religion is.
Jacob thought that.
Okay?
In his early life, the first time Jacob goes to Bethel, God comes to him with a vision and says, Jacob, I'm the God of your father, Abraham. I will bless you and give you this land. Jacob wakes up and says, oh, I did not know this is a holy place. And he says, I tell you what, if God will bless me and if he will clothe me and feed me and grant me a safe passage home, then he'll be my God.
Yeah. I think you're certainly right, and I think this is one of the things that the book of Job really challenges us in. Maybe even challenging us to realize that maybe that's what we've thought, maybe unwittingly. I mean, how many times do people complain about the fact, you know, well, what's the point of going to church? I didn't get anything out of it. You know, what's the point of serving God? I didn't get anything out of that. And how often do people stop serving God when they stop seeing any kind of benefit they're getting right now from that? Dave?
Peggy had written down here, God did promise us a quiet journey, but he did promise us a safe arrival.
I like that. Say that again, louder, so everyone can hear it.
God didn't promise us a quiet journey, but he did promise us a safe arrival.
I like that. Very well. Well said. I'm going to get Caleb, and then we've got several hands here.
One of the criticisms that I hear a lot in the secular world towards Christianity in general is that Christians, anytime something good happens, they give credit to God. Anytime something bad happens, they blame it on the devil. And that's something that people in the secular world find really off-putting. And the book of Job, I think, addresses that. No, that's not really the case. And squares that idea with how can a loving God do something that I might not really like, in my life here on earth. And sort of addresses that idea that God really is omnipotent, but really does cause these things, but at the same time is looking out for.
Yeah, that's interesting that you raised that. And I think you're right that you said that people view it as off-putting. Yeah. On the other hand, on the other hand, when you look at what the book of Job is presenting, that strikes people as off-putting. That, okay, so no, it isn't that God does the good things to you and Satan does the bad things, and that's the little simplistic way we can view it. No, that's certainly not what the book of Job is teaching. What the book of Job is teaching is that even though those bad things, even the bad things Satan brings on you, ultimately are brought on you by whom? By God. In fact, we addressed this at the very beginning of this class. And I remember that, you know, there was just, that even rubs us the wrong way. You know, we don't really want to accept that, but you really can't get away from that. That's the nature of God, and the high nature of God the Bible presents necessarily means that if he's in control of everything, even in control of Satan, then ultimately even those bad things that, yes, Satan brings upon people, but still it's ultimately at the allowance of God. And that can be off-putting. And yet, the book of Job doesn't run from that, doesn't try to hide from that. It puts it right out there on the table, and ultimately, what Caleb is saying is that it's presenting the idea that God really does care about us. But hang on just a second, because I have to address this question. But does the book of Job explain how that is? Or does it really answer, you know, I mean, someone says, well, but okay, if God brings all these things on me, yet he's supposed to be loving? You know, I mean, the book of Job addresses that, but how is it addressing that? Go ahead.
This is my take on it.
28, yeah.
When I read that, what I take away from it is he talks about wisdom and deem as great treasure. And you can go to a mine for gold and silver before you go to get wisdom. And sort of the implied conclusion, at least in my opinion, is that through this suffering, you can find wisdom. And
okay.
So Job, after all these things happened to him, was probably a much more caring, compassionate, and wise man than he was before these things happened to him. And you might not have
I think that's true.
Like
I think that's very, very true, and I think that's one of the clear messages of the book of Job. And that whole discourse on wisdom, remember that in chapter 28? And what did he compare the search for wisdom to in this earthly life? Who? Those people who are mining for gold and are willing to just, I mean, what an arduous task, you know. Strenuous, difficult, you don't even know when you're going to find it, you know. And yet, ultimately, that's what he compares finding wisdom to. And I think you're right. I think Job himself acknowledges at the end that now he sees what he did not see before. Even though the ultimate answer as to why God did all this isn't given. God doesn't reveal that. Okay, there were several other hands. I think Isaac was first. I think Dwayne was first, sorry, and then Isaac. What's the purpose of Job? The book of Job to show human beings should not presume that they understand everything and to try to force God to do things on their timetable and all that. I think you're blind if you don't come away with that as you look at the book of Job. All right, let me get Isaac and Debbie, whoever's first. Ladies first, Isaac. Well said, and I appreciate the fact that she's emphasizing that one major purpose of the book of Job is to teach against our human judgment of presuming that we can look at events and see what God is doing and why God's doing this, and even judging other people. Well, they must be really bad. That's why they got their comeuppance from God. Well, I mean, we really don't know that, and the same thing. With ourselves, we really can't understand all that, and I think this is such a problem with human beings. We so do that. We just assume that we can read the tea leaves of life, and you just can't. Okay.
Saying there's a distinction between the things that God in His almighty power.
Well,
committing things, and doing things. God does no evil. He tells us that. He does no evil and no wickedness.
And this distinction, that's a tough one. I mean, logically, to even, you know, see that. And I don't have a problem. In fact, I myself have said there are things that God permits to happen, even evils that sinful people do, God may permit them. Doesn't mean that God was wanting them in the sense that he's a co-conspirator with the evil and he wants it. But God does allow certain things to happen. On the other hand, you know, you can't so stress that you sort of move into the position that God's not in control of all that, and that's where kind of the rub comes from, and it's hard for our human minds to grasp. And this is what we addressed even at the very first of this quarter, where we're talking about the problem of evil in this world and theodicy and justifying God and how do you do that and all that. And there are those kinds of questions that you know, this is all part of, I think, what the book of Job is doing. It's saying this is part of that which we really can't fathom. And you just have to trust that God's motive is not like Satan's motive. His motive is not some evil motive. But it's only your faith in the character of God that's going to do that. Yeah. And that's what makes it tough for us. But the book of Job is just saying, hey, this is part of it. It's part of walking by faith. Okay? Yeah.
Pretty good. There's a saying, especially in my industry right now, which is very depressing, but we always say, hey, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And I think that kind of coincides with times when you're blessed and have plenty of what you need. It's very easy to get off track as to what your motivation is in worshiping God.
Right. Very good. Well said. All right. Any other comments before we move on about the purpose of the book?
We know that from James, every good and perfect gift is from God. So, and it comes down without any variation. It's only righteous and the unrighteous. But the idea that what we were talking about, God had no, not direct will.
Very, very true. Good, good. Okay, Isaac wants to follow up on that.
Just a very quick one, Marty. That what's the purpose of the book? Something that to me was a very strong purpose in the book is to show me that in the middle of my pain and agony, it does not, and I come back to the word expectation, it does not mean God is angry or that he hates me, like Jesus on the cross. In the middle of our heartache, we could be experiencing God's greatest love. We do not comprehend this.
Yeah. Really true. Very, very true.
I think it's prevalent in our society now that God is ascribed to this all-loving, almost blind, numb
Yeah, that is such a good point. In fact, even chapter 42, when God vindicates Job, how does he do it? He doesn't put his arm around him, and all the things that maybe our society would, want, or he doesn't, just express his love for Job the way that our society is sort of stereotypical. This is how it has to be done. How does he vindicate Job? How does he vindicate, after he corrects him, how does he vindicate Job? Really, in an indirect way. Yeah, he says, I'm angry with you three men because you've not spoken properly of me, as they were condemning Job, the servant of God. And so I'm going to have you go to Job and Job pray for you. And it's all by implication. It's, and it's still God in a very judgmental fashion. So it's not this syrupy, mushy kind of love. And I don't mean by that there's never a time for syrupy, mushy love, But I'm just saying that's even not how God does it here. And you're exactly right. Our society is just so moved in the direction of love and just ignoring everything. There was something more important even than wrapping his arm around Job at this point and comforting him in maybe the maternal way that we might think. There was something more important than that. It was God teaching people a lesson here that they needed to learn. That's more important sometimes than just the lovey-dovey, cushy, whatever. I hope that makes some sense. That, very, very true. Very, very true. Yes, Carl. What a cold man you are.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness for that, because he feels it like it is, and it's not I smashed my finger with the hammer that you told me I couldn't touch, but he's like, he's like, well, learn the lesson from it. And that's how God is. He loves us, but he would die for his children. He loves them. But he's not gonna sugarcoat it and be mushy gushy and sorry baby, And that's a good balance to have, and that's why I think God used Job a man, and that he is the father, and that's how it is simple in life, it can't always just be mushy gushy. That's not real.
Very good. I hope the tape picked up what you said. I may go back and listen to it over and over again, just to hear mushy gushy. I just would love to hear that. That's really very, very well said. That's good. Okay, before we move on, yeah.
The first thing God said to him was, "Gird up your loins like a man." And then
that's true. That's very true. Irma.
I mean, it's true that he was teaching us, and he was teaching the Israelites, and he was teaching Job's friends, but he was teaching Job too, and Job was putting too much trust in his righteousness,
right,
and in his wisdom. And when he's talking about in the last chapter, I abhor myself, he's talking about, I've seen myself as compared to you now, and I see that
That's well said, and especially in light of the purpose of the book of Job, and I like you're using the term multitasking because really purpose is, and even in fact, this is to me what makes the book of Job so fascinating. It has so many layers to it. It challenges you at so many different levels. And there's so many different issues that all conflate. It's like an onion. You can, you know, keep peeling back the layers. You know. Okay, let's move on here. What lesson have you learned from the book of Job? Maybe that's already been covered. I don't know. Any lessons from the book? Maybe not even the main purpose of the book, but something you learned in the book that struck you. That's really good.
And these guys, you know, the guys who were talking to Job, had that idea. Just
yeah.
Like the idolaters did. I worship you because I want this. I worship that one because I want that. And he's trying to tell them that, you know, that ain't me.
I hope everyone heard what Darren said, but because that's really, I think, such a, in fact, I put this as one of the main purposes of the book of Job, is to help show that nuance of God, that worshiping God, it's not like worshiping some pagan deity where everything is a quid pro quo thing. Much more nuanced here with God. Not that there's not benefit from that, but it's much more nuanced. And even Job's friends, even Job himself, originally, I would think, had that same kind of low-level, almost pagan-level theology, view of God and view of the relationship between man and God. And I think of what Eliphaz had said about, you know, Job, you're acting as if God would really care to try to mold you into something else or better or what. You know, God doesn't care about men like that. He's just a judge, you know. And so, you know, that's a pagan level theology. And so that's I think a major part of the book of Job. Let me get Johnny first. Yeah, that Greek word that's so often translated patience, it could also be rendered, and usually when the Bible uses it, it means perseverance. Not patience in the sense of someone waiting for something, but patient enduring, persevering through a trial. But even so, yeah, if you look at what the whole book of Job is about, not the man Job, but the book of Job, yeah, it's not trying to teach so much the perseverance of Job. It's trying to teach all these other things that we've been talking about.
I just thought that, you know, what does it teach us? Just coming back to how powerful God is and how almighty he is. I mean, with all these pagan gods and you give. I mean, if you think about this, you know, that as Moses said to God, God, don't destroy these people because you know what the nations do think that you just got angry. You know, God just...
Yeah.
Love me and believe in me. God's not like a pagan God. You may have to say, well, you get, you know, you're going to. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
God's no coward. God is God.
And this.
Love me or burn. Finish.
This emphasis, and I think the book of Job certainly emphasizes this, the greatness of God What's the portion of Job that really emphasizes that? Job 38 through 41. I mean, though, you know, those four chapters right there, God's two discourses to Job, God's two responses to Job. And all that he's talking about is, okay, Job, you are here and I am. And how does he emphasize the greatness of God? How does he demonstrate the greatness of God? By all these things in creation that are just so above man, even though man's supposed to be the ruler that God put in charge of the world, yet still, you know, he's so ignorant of all these things, even the animals that he emphasizes. And I think maybe in our culture that doesn't resonate quite as much with us. I hope that's not true. But even all this business about the wild animals and behemoth and leviathan and all that, as we advance, as God allows us to advance in our science and technology, we still can't answer those questions that God asked Job in Job 38. I mean, all we know is more about what we don't know. And if God were speaking in our day, I mean, what other animals might hear, or other life forms, or what? Who knows what is out there? You know, I hope they do find life on Mars. You know, I mean, whatever. You know, that just further glorifies God. I mean, that's, you know, and here we are. You know, it took us this long to finally figure out. You know, hey, you know, I mean, that's how great God is. And the book of Job is really just reminding us of all that. Not that what God even says to Job is the extent of what Job doesn't understand or what man doesn't grasp. It's just sort of an inkling that you don't know anything virtually about this world like you think you do. And it impresses me that the more we advance, the more those chapters in Job should still resonate. He would regard us as his servant.
As his servant. We don't get that from the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've missed a whole lot.
I think that's well. That's very, very, very true.
If our intent is to be God's servant, then that's the way he'll treat us.
Very, very true. Billy, now I don't want any mushy gushy stuff from you, buddy. All right. Okay. That's a great, great point. I mean, you know, probably, though this is certainly not, a main thrust of the book of Job, the book of Job, probably more so than maybe any biblical book, maybe except Revelation, maybe, or maybe Daniel, kind of pulls back the curtain on the spiritual realm and gives us a little bit of a hint of this spiritual battle going on, or just God, Satan, you know. All that, and there are things going on in this creation, even in what we call the spiritual realm, that we have no knowledge of. So it should further humble us. So that's good.
If men like Job and men like Peter, who are sifted, are called,
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really true. What frustrates you about the book? What frustrates you about the book? I'm allowing you to admit it. Go ahead. Why does it? I agree with you. I mean, what, you know, I wish there was more explanation of Behemoth and Leviathan. I showed you the picture. That's what I showed you is exactly how Behemoth and Leviathan look. Yeah, that's a frustration. And yet again, maybe even though part of that is he's just giving a hint of what you really don't know, because that's really the point of that. You know, he's really showing the ignorance about these other creatures of God. So, you know, maybe that's a part of it. What else frustrates you about the book?
The attitude of his wife is never dealt with.
David, women will be frustrating you for a long time. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, she's, I asked you in the very beginning of the class, you know, who are the characters in the book of Job, the main characters, you know, and everyone always says Mrs. Job. Mrs. Job is not even really, I mean, she's just part of the calamity. That's, you know, extremely minor.
She's going to be pretty frustrated, too. I mean, her children just died, and they weren't just her children, they were her children as well.
I mean, you know, you got to feel for her, too. Right, right. Let me see. Has this study changed how you think about God? Aaron.
I'm sorry, I was actually just going back to the question.
Sure, go ahead, go ahead.
What frustrates you?
Go ahead.
In one of the first two classes that we had about the book, we talked about how, you know, looking at how Satan presented this to God and God allowed it to happen, and we kind of just had this feeling of it's just not fair. And then we kind of thought that as we went through the book, that might make us feel a little bit better.
I said, you won't like what the book gives you as the answer to that.
That's the frustrating part. I understand why it happened, but that doesn't mean that it still doesn't feel like it's just not fair.
Okay. That's really why I asked this question, because I figured that we would kind of get that. Yeah, it is frustrating. The fact that God doesn't explain more to us. Let's admit that. And it's okay to admit that. I think the book of Job is acknowledging that. Yes, this is the frustration of human beings. They don't get more information from God. And again, this is just part of this, okay, God is saying, trust me, I've given you what you can handle, what you need, what's best for you. You're just going to have to trust me. At least right now in our existence, we have this frustration in our lack of knowledge. But I think eventually, you know, all this will be made clear to us. I don't think it will be in this world. But yes, I think that is part of the frustration that we deal with. And yet, let me just say this, Aaron. I do see sort of a calm in Job at the end. When he finally is humbled, and, you know, he still has the same lack of knowledge. God hadn't explained things, but yet he don't you get a sense from Job at the end when he repents that still there's a sense of almost calmness. Okay, you know, I'm recognizing and acknowledge my ignorance, and you're in control. And I think if we can just get to the point where we recognize that, okay, that's God's business. Let God have the steering wheel. You know, let's move over in the passenger seat or the back seat, and let God drive. I think that helps remove a lot of the emotional frustration. I don't mean that we totally don't have it. Exactly.
Acceptance and not trying to justify God to man.
Mm-hmm. And not trying to always try to justify God to man, not try to figure it out, explain everything, you know. There is a peace that finally comes from accepting that I don't know is an okay answer. And when you finally accept that, since you know God knows, it's letting Him have the reins. You know, I think there is a peace. Be still and know that I am God. Irma? Right. That is difficult, and it's a frustrating circumstance to be in. But doesn't it help maybe a little bit to know from here on out that when we go through those times, well, okay, we're in the position of Job, okay? You know? It's almost like what the book does, it helps enlighten us about these things so that when we go through our times of trial and our struggles and the frustrations, we've been there before. Because we've been there with Job. This is not unfamiliar terrain. So maybe that could be part of the help here to us. Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, we'll stop there. Thank you, folks.